Prajapati Daksha drank only water and ate only air. Thus, undergoing great austerities, they recited this mantra. Let's offer our respectful obeisances unto Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always situated in his transcendental abode. Since he is the Supreme Person, Paramahansa, let's offer our respectful obeisances unto him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. From these verses, it is apparent that the chanting of the Maha Mantra, or the Vedic mantras, must be accompanied by severe austerities. In Kali Yuga, people cannot undergo severe austerities like those mentioned herein, drinking only water and eating only air for many months. One cannot imitate such a process, but at least one must undergo some austerity by giving up four unwanted principles, namely illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication, and gambling. Anyone can easily practice this tapasya, and then the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra will be effective without delay. One should not give up the process of austerity. If possible, one should bathe in the waters of the Ganges or Yamuna, or in the absence of the Ganges and Yamuna, one may bathe in the water of the sea. This is an item of austerity. Our Krishna consciousness movement has therefore established two very large centers, one in Vrindavan and another in Mayapur, Navadvip. There, one may bathe in the Ganges or Yamuna, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and thus become perfect, and return home, back to Godhead. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Uttale Shivadnakti Vedanta Swamaniti Nami Namaste Saraswati Dede Gaura Manipachaya Nirvishesheshunyavadi Pastritya Vishatarani Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivastadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Vajkapcharubhya Chakripa Sindhu Vyayavisha Pagidana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna. Yes, so this just happens to be where we opened the book. There was actually a piece of paper there, but anyway. And we see what a nice verse and purport. How very, very suitable for all of us. It's really very special, actually. But having said that, We could say that, and we do say that, about any verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is simply an ocean of nectar, and certainly. And you can just close your eyes and just open it anywhere, and there will be sufficient air for your great progress and your success in Krishna consciousness. That's a fact. This is it's very interesting. This is, as we read, the sons of Daksha. It is a bit of a long story, but Daksha had a whole lot of sons. I'm not going to look through the other verses to check how many, but we're talking about hundreds or even a thousand or even more. He really had a lot of sons. And Daksha is a Prajapati. Prajapati means someone whose service it is, whose business, whose duty, natural duty it is, to populate the universe, or to help populate the universe, not just to have a child or two or three or even four to keep the human population going, but actually to populate the universe from the outset when there was not really population. So in other words, it was his duty to have many children. And so the first time he had at least 1,000, I don't know if any of you remember offhand, but it was just really a lot. And he wanted them to do, okay, this is the second group. There were two groups of 1,000, it looks like. Two groups of 1,000. So the first group, in order for them to develop real character and really be positively minded, very strong persons, he ordered them that, okay, before you marry and produce population, do a spiritual program, like of including at least austerity and chanting of mantras and things, because then you'll come back and you'll really be empowered, and you'll have good children, and you'll have the strength to bring them up properly, which is not easy to do. Did you hear that, Keshava? Yeah. It's not easy to do, because in this world, everyone, including the children, everyone has the idea, the desire to enjoy independently. And therefore we see the little children, they don't want to do what their parents say. Doesn't happen with you, does it? Not sure, right? Not too little. Anyway. We observe and we see how things work. So there they were then, doing that program to prepare themselves for the great responsibilities which would soon be theirs, according to the desire of their father, Prajapati Daksha. And who should come along but Narada Muni, who is a great renunciate and great preacher and just very great devotee. And he preached to them that, listen, why are you doing this? Not exactly why you're doing it, but what are you doing this for? You're doing this for producing children. Come on, don't waste your time. You can do this program, but for the Supreme Lord, to become free from material entanglement, and to go back to Godhead, do it like that. And he preached them in such ways they became inspired. And they agreed, yes. And they gave up the program of their father, at least in terms of producing children. And they became renunciants. And Daksha was so upset. But anyway, it is not easy to keep a good man down. So he had another 1,000 sons. And this time he tried to really, impress upon them that how they should do things so they don't get caught up with Narada Muni again. So they also went off to start the same type of program. And this particular mantra we mentioned here was given to them, I guess, by Daksha himself. Om Namo Narayanaya Purushaya Mahatmade Vishuddhasattva Dishnyaya Mahahamsaya Dhimahi. They're chanting this mantra of offering obeisances to the Supreme Lord Narayana, but with a view to having children. Take a guess what happens next. Take a guess. Narada Muni came along again, and same thing happened. He preached to them, "What are you doing? Come on. You're doing austerities, you're chanting mantras, okay. Do it for the pleasure of the Lord and really help yourselves and help human society." So they also gave up their whole program of becoming Prajapatis, producers of population. And this time Daksha got so upset he cursed Narada Muni. "You will not be able to remain in any place more than 3 days." Yeah. So anyway, in the Purport version, the Prabhupada focuses on certain practical points when you are doing such things, when particularly you're chanting mantras like the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, or, as Prabhupada says, different Vedic mantras. What they have chanted is Om Namo Narayanaya, etc. It's a Vedic mantra. You may or may not, I don't know, be aware of these different types of mantras. But this particular mantra that they are chanting, Om Namo Narayanaya, etc., ending with the word Dhimahi. This is actually a Gayatri mantra. Whenever you find a mantra, there are different signs, but one of them is, whenever you find a mantra or a verse, for example in Srimad Bhagavatam actually, which ends with the word Dhimahi, then you must know this is a Gayatri mantra. Now those of us who have second initiation, not yet, Mataji. Anyway, those of you who have second initiation, we chant 7 Gayatri mantras, beginning with the famous Hindu, it's actually called the Brahma Gayatri, Om Bhur Bhuva Svata Savitra, etc. So a lot of people from Hindu backgrounds, as far as they're concerned, this is Gayatri. But actually the fact is, there are many Gayatri mantras. Like I said, we all here who are second initiated, we chant seven, including that one, but six others. Two which are dedicated to the spiritual master, two others. The first one is that Brahma Gayatri. Then two dedicated to the spiritual master, two dedicated to Lord Chaitanya, and two dedicated to Lord Krishna. Seven Gayatris. And it's not for the ladies, don't mind, but for the gentlemen. If or when, or Hare Krishna, you take sannyas. Anyway, if or when. You will be given an eighth Gayatri mantra, the sannyas Gayatri. But there are many. There are many Gayatri mantras. If you really get involved in detailed deity worship, you'll be given Gayatri mantras for the different deities you're worshipping. Like there's Nityananda Gayatri. There are Gayatri mantras for Radharani. And there are many other Gayatri mantras. And this is a Gayatri mantra. And we can tell because it finishes with the word Dhimahi, which particularly denotes, it means to meditate, and particularly denotes like a very strict and very focused process of chanting mantra or mantras. So Prabhupada makes the point that right at the beginning of Purport, Prabhupada makes the point, and it's a very important point, that from here we can see that the chanting of either Hare Krishna or any Vedic mantras, and there are Vedic mantras which are not Gayatri mantras too, but there are many mantras. It's a big field. But Prabhupada makes the point that any of these chanting of these different mantras, whatever, must be accompanied by severe austerity. And we read here, the sons, they're called the Savalashvas. That's what the group is called. Savalashvas. They are drinking only water, no fridges, no Sprite, no 7-Up, as we say sometimes. Sa-upa. Sa-upa. No 7-Up. No tea. Not even herbal tea. No milk. Water. Only water as an austerity. And what was it? And eating only air. Eating air. Yes. Which, anyway, obviously means they're just breathing. It's not that you can actually eat air. That's what they're doing. This is severe austerity. This is very severe. I mean, there are other examples, like, I don't have the reference right here, but Dhruva Maharaj in the fourth canto, he also did a program, he was given by Narada Muni, a program for, that's a long story, but for self-improvement, shall we say, in which, he did it for 6 months. And I forget offhand the details, but After some time, he ate only every third day. Then he stopped eating and he drank water only once a week. And then after some time, he only breathed once a month or something like that. What do you think, Hare Krishna? I don't know what to say. Kiyo Ponsa. Biamong program. Anyway. It's way beyond any of us. Just way beyond. Here's another one. Now you could, listen to this one. It still is the month of Kajayani. It's still a couple more days to go with just the Ekadasi. So, in the next couple of days, the Purnima will be the last day of Kajayani. This is the month the gopis perform Kajayani Vrata, as described in detail in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that Kajayani Vrata, actually, we went to that place a few weeks ago, where at the temple of Kathyayani Devi at Chiyagat in Vrindavan on the banks of the Yamuna. So their Kathyayani Vrata, forgetting Krishna as their husband, it involved that you cook, or someone cooks, khichdi, which is only rice and dal, and water, of course, but there's literally nothing else. It means no vegetables, no spices, not even salt or anything. You just boil rice and dal. And then, when it is boiled, well, you offer it to Krishna. But then, when it comes time for the devotee, the lady, who is observing the Kathyayani Vrata, then that sort of khichdi, totally simple khichdi, is actually just placed or even thrown on the floor, the actual floor itself. And then you eat it. The lady has to hold her hands behind her back and lean forward, sitting cross-legged, and lean forward and eat with her mouth off the ground. And she can eat as much as she likes. But as soon as she sits up to take a breath or whatever, that's it for the day. She can only eat again the next day. And it's once a day. It's only once a day. What do you think? Acacia? The Ambon program? What would you say? Anyway, you want to try? No. Don't try. Okay. Don't try. So the gopis did this for a month, in order to get Krishna as their husband. And on the actual Purnima, which, anyway, it's coming, it might be tomorrow, it might be the next day, or the latest the day after, I would think, then this is where that pastime occurred, of Krishna stealing their clothes in recognition of their desire, in reciprocation with their desire, that they wanted him as their husband. But anyway, the basic point, though, is that if we're going to chant Hare Krishna or Gayatri mantras, if one is second initiated, or any Vedic mantras actually means that it applies to demigod worshippers. It's not just for the devotees. Although, of course, for us particularly, it is for us as devotees. It must be accompanied by severe austerity. It's not that just in some sort of five-star deluxe situation we chant, but actually it must be accompanied in order to be effective, or at least effective to the maximum degree. It has to be accompanied by austerity. Not for the sake of just self-denial or something like that, but so we can become detached from what is the opposite, which is material existence. Because if we chant just absorbed in material consciousness and material circumstances, then spiritual advancement will not take place much, if at all. But certainly not much. And certainly not as much as really should be. So Srila Prabhupada makes the point, he mentions these particular austerities here of these sabbalashtras. But then Prabhupada makes the point that now, in this Kali Yuga, it's not really possible. Means, you know what it really means, the fact that it's not possible? It really means that if someone tries to do it, they will fail. And they'll not just fail, but they'll fail in such ways that they will go backwards. Means, for example, someone tries to do some austerity, like reduce their sleeping drastically, for example, or maybe reduce their eating drastically, something like that. Sometimes people do. Then what happens, in many cases, is that because they're not capable of it, even just their physical system, what to speak of their psychology, will just not allow them to do it for very long. So certainly after a little while, they stop. But when they stop, they often don't just stop and go back to some normal program of eating or sleeping. In many cases, they really just rarely get into eating, and they rarely get into sleeping, overdoing it, because it's built up, and you know they have now such an intense feeling of wanting to do these things. This may not be a nice thing to mention, but I read yesterday, on CNN, I think, so it must be right. That's a joke, by the way. That some girl somewhere, teenage girl, I think she was 17, anyway, some young girl, she had been vegan for 4.5 years, but it was very difficult. And some of her friends were also vegan, but they couldn't manage. And they went back to meat eating. And one of the friends didn't just go back to meat eating like in the normal way. You know, you have your meat and your veggies and so on. He became a carnivore. Only meat. And he was telling the girl that, oh, I feel really good. Much better than when I was a vegan. You should try it. So this girl, she is now giving a report how she did that. She went back to being a carnivore and only eating. She only ate meat for a month. And now she's giving a report how it's great. Sorry. Hare Krishna. But this is the thing. Madhuri Kalamba, in Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, talks about this sort of phenomenon. It's called, what's it now? Vishaya Sagara? No, Vishaya Sagara. But it's Vishaya something. You try to renounce something in the name of spiritual progress, but it's artificial and beyond your natural capabilities. And he says, in the end, you end up enjoying the thing that you were trying to renounce. It means you just get into it excessively. So for us, well, the principle is austerity is needed. If someone chants Hare Krishna while not following regulative principles, it will not work well. It will, at best, it will take a long time. At worst, you'll just stop the Krishna conscious activity because the influence, the negative influence of meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, that they're powerful things. And so they can easily just contaminate your being to the point that you'll just think, oh, why am I bothering chanting Hare Krishna? But some austerity is needed. You have to do some austerity. You have to free yourself, at least to some basic degree, from just materialistic, sensual activity. So Prabhupada has been there. Prabhupada says, at least one must undergo the austerity of giving up illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, at least that. Actually, it will be very difficult for people unless they're chanting Hare Krishna also, because that will give the potency to say no. Yeah. The ability to say no. To say no, you need some strength. So therefore you have to, spiritual strength. Therefore you have to chant Hare Krishna also. Otherwise you won't be able to say no for long. So yes, what Prabhupada says, you can easily practice this austerity, chanting Hare Krishna. And if you can live by the Ganges or Yamuna or even just by the sea and take bath in these like special waters, that's also nice. Yeah. And then you can become perfect and go back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any comments or questions? Question? No? What would you say? To comprehend. Is that understandable? You understand everything. All right. Any comments or questions?
So for like people is in his home.
Yeah.
So for us, austerity would mean following the 480 principles and following instructions of the spiritual master.
Yes.
And at times we see that even like somebody is initiated, but he has like difficulty maintaining his principles.
Yes.
So in this case, this happens because of lack of quality chanting or cleansers. How to deal with this situation?
How to deal with it?
Like to strengthen oneself to be able to.
Yeah. The thing is that there can be, there's a few different possibilities in terms of what may cause it. One possibility, at least say, in the sense of being a contributing factor, is that we are habituated to doing these things for, you know, however many years in this lifetime. I mean, it depends on our upbringing, but for most people, they're habituated to these things, and it may be for many lifetimes indeed. So, you know, there's a saying, old habits die hard. You don't just say, oh, I'm just going to stop doing X, if it's something which you're really habituated to. So that, you know, one's conditioned nature can be or is usually a factor. Then another very important factor, and more often than not, when it comes to like reaching a, we would say, a tipping point where things actually fall, instead of being a bit of a struggle, you're sort of somewhat on the edge, but actually you go over the edge, then it's generally not simply conditioned nature, although it will be a factor. But generally, the particular point which makes the difference is offense, which includes, you know, like when we recite the 10 offenses at the end, we say it's also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. So there are 10 offenses, but this is also, it's like an 11th offense, you can say. So, inattention while chanting means the attention, it's not just that we're not attentive to the chanting, just only, but it means we are giving our attention to something else. Yeah. You cannot go into a state of no attention. You can't. Attention is there, and it has to be given to, and it will be given to something. So, offense then involves the giving of our attention to something other than our chanting. Yeah. And if it reaches a certain point, you know, the tipping point, then one may fall off the edge. I mean, even just being in a sort of halfway point, maintaining the principles physically, but not mentally, means one is already sort of in a fallen condition, at least in a technical sense. You know, when we ask devotees at initiation, when's our initiation? When?
Friday.
Oh, it's Friday. Okay. Here?
Yeah.
Right, okay. So, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. When we ask devotees to follow the regular principles and not break the regular principles, we are specifically referring to physically. We're not specifically saying, I mean, although obviously one should do one's level best to not think of those things, but if sometimes, somehow it happens that the devotee does happen to think of doing one of those things, then it's not, in this context, it's not considered exactly breaking a principle. In this context, only if a person does it physically, whatever it is. Yeah. So, but the idea and the hope is, and we definitely must make every endeavor to control the mind so the mind doesn't think of these things at all. But if the mind does, then it's a mental fall down. It's a mental fall down. Yeah. So yeah, if a person comes to a point, it's one thing having sort of, you could say, leftover material desires from your previous days and your previous ways of living. But if it ever comes to the point of actually engaging in some activity against the regulative principles, generally the thing which really breaks things is offense. Therefore, we need to be on guard all the time, in a sense. At least making every effort to give attention in our chanting, and not just in our chanting, but in all of our devotional activities. And we need to, particularly if we notice that we're getting our consciousness, we're becoming a little, you know, like inclined towards some non-Krishna conscious things. If we notice that this is happening, then we need to, you could say, well, sometimes we use the term, do a spring cleaning of our consciousness, of our whole life in Krishna consciousness. I don't know about here, but in England, there's this old traditional folk idea that you clean the kitchen, you know, you clean it, but in spring, you take the place apart, and you just go into every little, you know, you take the stove apart. This is called a spring cleaning. Yeah. It means you really go in depth to clean out what may be hiding somewhere subtly. So every now and then we need to do a spring cleaning, like a review, at least a review, as objectively as possible, of how is my Krishna consciousness? How is my state of mind? How is my life in Krishna consciousness? And pray to Krishna, please help me to see clearly enough what I need to really take action about in order to correct myself. Please give me the intelligence, Krishna, to see, and please give me the strength to do the needful to correct myself. Because materialism, there's a term, creeping materialism. Creeping. It may not necessarily just come and attack you and just jump on your head. It may sort of, you know, subtly sneak in. That some bad habit that when you're in a better state of mind, you wouldn't even consider. But now you start thinking about it a bit. Or even, you know, just as an example, I don't want to appear to be excessively conservative, but because I don't think I am. But like you're living at home with the family, and for whatever reason, usually a television is there. But you're a devotee and you're trying to practice seriously. So you know, we don't watch television. What's the value? But then at some point, you know, the idea may come in, well, I could watch a little something. Or a little something else. And before you know, every evening you're sitting there watching TV. It crept in. Yeah, it crept in. So there's creeping materialism. Yeah. It's not just blatant and heavy. It's very subtle and just sneaking in, almost unnoticed. Yeah. So we definitely need to do checks. And if we have friends or associates in Krishna consciousness who are able and willing to kind of keep an eye on us a bit and sometimes make a point if they feel we need to be reminded about something to keep ourselves Krishna conscious, it's nice to have like that. You know, when they do japa retreats, when Mahatma Prabhu does japa retreats, oftentimes he tries to pair devotees together. And they call it, you know, an Americanism, but it's called the buddy system. The buddy system. That each morning, one of you rings the other. Are you chanting your rounds yet? Like at 5 or 5:30 or sometime. Are you chanting your rounds yet? And regularly in touch. And if they see, you know, something which appears to be not right, but saying, you know, really, you shouldn't do like this. So these things will protect us. But ultimately, if we make the decision, I want to deviate from Krishna consciousness, there's not much that can help. Except something drastic. And therefore Krishna sometimes, if he sees his devotee is deviating, and for whatever reason other devotees are not able to help, and even maybe the spiritual master can't help, so Krishna sometimes sends some dramatic wake-up call to just show, listen, you are off track, get yourself together or else. Yeah. But if you reach that point, that's, you know, you're really in danger. Is that okay? Hare Krishna.
To Prabhu, please give me food not cooked by me. In restaurants, you have to cook the food. What are the goodies to cook the food?
Well, yes, of course. You know, unless there's some special circumstance, we should only eat food prepared by the devotee. Therefore, we, you know, like us, me, and Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu is with me at the moment, when we travel, like when we came here, the devotees cooked prasad, we had it on the plane. When we came back from India, same thing, that's right. And so we always do that, you know, unless there's some special situation out of our control. You know, even Prabhupada sometimes would have the devotees, like traveling in India, buy some samosas or something that had been cooked on the platform of the railway station. He did it on a few occasions. But it was not a normal program. Just under some special circumstances, if there's no access for an extended period of time, something like that. Yeah.
But we have some restaurants which are called by devotees. But it's another devotee's cook.
Yeah. Well, that's not the best. If they offer the food, that's something. But it's not quite the same as cooked by devotees and then offered. Yeah. So, you know what I'd say? If there's some important social event, and you're kind of, you know, you must go, and it's a situation like that, then I wouldn't, like, bring your own. You could do, and some do. But as long as it is offered, then it's sort of, it's a little borderline, but, you know, it's on the little more positive side of the borderline, at least it's offered. You know, if it's cooked by meat eaters, if somehow or other the devotee owns a restaurant that is employing meat eaters to cook, well, it's sort of the same principle, but again, it's even worse. Prabhupada really emphasized eating food, proper prasada, you say. Proper prasada. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. You need.